daughter, and now it appears that maybe Carr has picked up a little bit of momentum and is stretching it back out now. You think you all are losing in a row?
Well, I thought it was going the other way. Is this a late report? I thought we were creeping up and he was about to go down the tube.
Well, since the second debate, we did pick up some points.
Right, we had a... We did interrupt our momentum there a little bit, but I think it's on the way back. I would say that the race right now is a virtual dead heat. Almost a tie. That's my own assessment, but it's very close.
Senator Dole, what did you think about Jack Anderson's column on the Notes Canvas?
Oh, I didn't even read it. I read excerpts of it, but that's been hashed and rehashed. There's nothing to it.
Do you think President Ford...
I do try to help farmers, though. I'll plead guilty to trying to help farmers.
I think Mr. Ford's going to be hurt any by the story which appeared the last couple of days that he perhaps may have attempted to stunt the investigation, Watergate investigation?
I don't think so. I think the president had a press conference today and responded to that question. I didn't see his answer, but I don't think he'll have any problem with that.
You don't think Watergate's that much of an issue?
No. I think they try to make it an issue, but I don't think it is an issue. That may be all we need. We're cracking the South, and we think we're ahead in Mississippi. And we're very hopeful and very optimistic.
You just came from Texas. How do you think you're doing in Texas?
I think very well. I think we may be slightly ahead in Texas. Had a great reception in Lubbock, and we were in San Antonio and Corpus Christi. And you could just sort of feel the momentum picking up the past few days. And I try to be objective. I really think it's coming.
Mr. Dole?
Yes?
We miss your charming wife. Where is she on this campaign trail?
Yeah, where is she?
Fort Worth.
Oh, she's in Fort Worth. Yeah. She's very good. In fact, she does a great job, and I just sort of go along for pictures and things like that. But she's an excellent campaigner.
There are many people, Senator, who criticize you, say that you've been somewhat narrow or somewhat, Mr. Mondale say you've been a hatchet man in this campaign.
Well, no, I didn't really expect Mr. Mondale to endorse us, but as someone said, it takes one to know one. But I'm not a hatchet man. I'm going to try to keep Mr. Carter honest. That's a full-time job, but I'm doing the best I can. I'm really a one-man truce squad. I'd like to have a lot of help if I could. All I can find, I'll use. But we just don't believe Mr. Carter should go around this country stating two or three positions on every issue. Now, that's been our job. We think we've been very effective, and we don't have any... one suggesting we're anything but that except the media from time to time.
Do you think there's been too much mudslinging, name calling in this campaign?
Well, Carter's done a great deal of it, but I think he's I was going to say he hadn't insulted anybody today, but I guess the Ladies' Home Journal said he's taken after Lyndon Johnson again. So he just can't help himself. He just likes to cut people up, I guess, and insult Americans. But he won't do it much longer.
Last question, but I can't hear anything anyway.
Talk about mudslinging, and Bob Dole has been accused of throwing a lot of mud. You don't characterize your statements as mudslinging?
No, I've never said anything personal about anybody in this campaign. I've talked about their records, but I've not called anyone a liar or cheat or distorter of the truth, as Governor Carter called the late President Johnson. I haven't insulted Billy Graham as a member of his family did. I just don't do that. We're very tough on the issues, but not on personalities.
No, didn't Billy Graham speak first in that case?
I don't think so. There goes Jimmy Carter. Yeah.
distinctly remember that when Gerald Ford was vice president, he visited Jackson, Mississippi, made a speech out in front of the War Memorial Building. And I remember that was 2 years ago during my first campaign for re-election. And I remember another thing that he said that day. He said, beware of a government that's big enough to give you everything you want, because that means that government is big enough to take away everything you have. And he believes that, and Senator Dole believes that. And obviously you realize that too, because of your sincere and dedicated involvement in being here tonight and showing support for this candidacy. Thank you for participating. Thank you for being here. And welcome to the 4th Congressional District, Senator Dole.
Thank you, Congressman Cochran. He's as good on the platform, speaking on behalf of President Ford, Senator Dole, as he is representing us in Washington. Back in March, we had a couple of people who had been serving in public life in Mississippi who said they had looked at what was going on in our state. They were aware of what the Republican Party was doing, what it was trying to do. They were aware of what the Mississippi Democratic Party had done, was doing, and that they had previously been identified with the Mississippi Democratic Party, but that they wanted henceforth to be known as Republicans and to join the Mississippi Republican Party. We opened the doors and said, welcome. When it came time to select co-chairman for President Ford's campaign in Mississippi, we went to one of those fellows. We went there for two reasons. He's one of the fellows he has as much ability as anybody that I know of in Mississippi. He's a man of personal integrity. With his personal integrity and ability, and the fact that he had been state chairman of the Mississippi Democratic Party, and we wanted to say to all of those out there who consider themselves to be independents and Democrats, that we have a place for you in the Mississippi Republican Party, and we'll move over and we'll share leadership roles with you if you'll come and help and work with us. So we asked Leon Bramlett from up Clarksdale Way, a small businessman, a farmer, and a former state chairman of the Mississippi Democratic Party, to be one of the co-chairmen along with Dr. Charlie Pruitt to serve for the President Ford Senator Dole Committee here in Mississippi. And it's an extreme delight and pleasure on my part tonight to be able to present to you, to introduce our featured speaker, Leon Bramlett, co-chairman of the President Ford Committee in Mississippi. Mr. Bramlett.
Pages of history. We can find many incidents where the most cherished concepts of life and liberty and happiness have perished for the want of strong men like Bob Dole to stand by them. It is my proud privilege to present him to you tonight, and I say to you, he will be the next Vice President of the United States, Senator Bob Dole.
Have this out on approval. We don't really use those things, but since my opponent mentioned, I thought I'd better bring one along. Well, Leon, I appreciate that introduction very much, and I really mean that because I know of your strong conviction. I know of your former allegiance to another party, a party that really left the Democrats. You didn't leave that party. They left you. And that's why we're so happy to have you in our party. And
And I'm reminded by Clark Reed of your great prowess as a Navy end back in the days when you beat Army very badly, when they had the stars and you had the touchdowns, and that's the way it's going to be on November 2nd.
Well,
right. Except we've got the stars, too. Well, I really feel that I'm sort of at an alumni meeting here tonight. Behind me sitting Tom Abernathy, and Tom and I served on the House Agriculture for many, many years, 8 to be exact. And I think I understand the problems of agriculture in this state. I know I do in my state. I think I voted pretty much that way, didn't I, Tom, as far as Mississippi's concerned. But Tom Abernathy is a great congressman and a great American, and I'm very proud to have known him. We work very closely. Then Prentice Walker was on that committee also, and Prentice and I did all we could to save the poultry industry. We worked hard. We laid a few eggs, Prentice, but otherwise we did all right, didn't we? Then John Bell Williams, of course. I was not privileged to serve on a committee with John Bell Williams, but I knew him well and admired him a great deal. And I also, of course, know Bill Comer and Charlie Griffin, two others who've endorsed President Ford and myself, and for that we're very grateful. I just say that it's an indication that we have a philosophy. We have a philosophy, and that's sort of the key to this campaign. Now, I'm also very honored to be seated next to Joe Barnes tonight. Joe and I were in the hospital together, as Charlie pointed out early on. 29 years ago, that seemed like a long time, but it really wasn't. We spent some time together, and he was a great friend of mine and a great help to me. He couldn't walk, and I couldn't do much with my hands, but together we made a pretty good man. And we played a lot of bridge, and otherwise conducted ourselves as, they didn't have Playboy then, as I remember, but I think we read the great westerns and things of that kind. In fact, I'm sure we did. I'd almost forgotten about Playboy. I hope you haven't. Some have said Carter's a lot closer to the center fold than he is to the center. I've been told the peanut is the easiest nut to crack. And I want to do a little of that later on, but I want to visit just a moment. You know, sitting there thinking about Joe Barnes, the days we spent in the hospital, and the great times we had together, reminded me of my first term in the Congress. And Thad's probably had this experience, because when you first go to Congress, you're sent out to speak, and you generally are sent to very safe districts, either safe Republican or safe Democrat, where you can't do any damage. And they used to do that with me. And I went to Charlie Alex district one time, and it was very safe Republican. I think there were only two Democrats there, and they weren't allowed out on weekdays. But when I arrived on Saturday afternoon, the chairman rushed up to the airplane and said, "Bob, we've only sold 10 tickets." He was nervous, and he didn't know whether I was Bob Dole or Bob Doyle or whatever. So he rushed me out to the radio station. Thought he might drum up some ticket sales. And in the course of the interview, of course, they went through my biography, that I was born, and all the other things that are essential. And they said that I was injured in World War II and all that stuff. And so as we got back into the car to start back to town, the announcer was sort of summarizing my visit. And he said that I was born in Western Kansas, represented Western Kansas, that prior to World War II, the congressman was a pre-medical student. He suffered a serious head injury in the war and then went into politics. So I don't know how you got here, but I know how I got here. So when President Ford was looking for a running mate, I was a natural. Someone said, in fact, they're asking with more frequency now, how did you get on the ticket? And I really don't know. Maybe the chairman does, or Clark knows, or someone knows, but well, Charlie, you know. Someone said the president flipped a coin about 3 a.m. and didn't come down. He said, I think Bob Dole's the guy we ought to have. But someone else told me that the morning of August 19th, it all happened, and we turned on our TV set. We always get up about 6, particularly when you think it might happen. But we turned on a certain network, and they said that the list is down to 4 names. One was Ann Armstrong, and of course, the person selected had to be back in Kansas City for a joint press conference at noon. Well, I knew that Ann Armstrong was in Scotland, so I scratched her off the list. The next name was William Ruckelshaus, and he was up in Tacoma, Washington, which is a long way from Kansas City. And I concluded that in addition, his name was too long for a button, so I scratched him off. And that left Senator Baker and Senator Dole, and I told my wife, Elizabeth, I said, if they don't go in alphabetical order, I think we've got a chance. But in any event, about an hour and a half later, the press started gathering in the hall. And our room was right next to the Connolly suite. And I said, oh, they're gathering. Big John has got it. And after about 30 minutes of frustration, I told Elizabeth, I said, Elizabeth, go over there at the door and put your ear down and see what's going on. Now, that's legal in Kansas City if you... if you listen from the inside out. It's that other way you get in trouble. And she came running back and said, I heard the name Dole mentioned. Well, I didn't know whether they were having a pineapple juice party or whether someone was applying for relief. But in any event, I started to get ready and shaved, and we did sort of stand next to the phone, both of us. And the phone rang, but just as a precautionary measure, something I learned from Tom Abernathy and the Ag Committee, when the president got on the line, I accepted before I identified myself, thinking he might have gotten the wrong number. And that's sort of how it happened. And we've been on the road ever since. And I think this is our 39th or 40th state. It's been a great honor and a privilege, believe me, and it's going to be a great honor and a privilege to be your next vice president. Last Friday night, we had a little meeting in Houston, and Senator Mondale was there. He didn't say much, but he did come to the meeting. And I kept trying to get him to say something nice about me. I said he was my friend so often I began to believe it. But he is my friend. And I'm going to treat him as well as I can next year. Senator Mondale is probably one of the nicest ultra-liberals I know. But he's very, very liberal. We wanted our debate, well, it really wasn't a debate, it was sort of a stand-up joint press conference, but we wanted ours in the South, because we thought he ought to see the South, or at least somewhere in the South. We finally got him to the Southwest in Texas. I don't think you've seen him in this state, have you? Has he been in Mississippi? I don't think he wants to come down here too badly. But he does fly into planes now and then at night for refueling, and then he takes off again. He hangs around up north a lot. There's something up there that interests him. But I want to say very seriously, I'm very touched to be here tonight. Not touched as deeply as you were, but I'm touched in any event. I want to be serious now. You're not supposed to have a sense of humor in politics. It upsets people. It keeps them awake. But I want to say I'm proud to be in Jackson. And, you know, right after the convention, all the stories appeared to say that Ford has written off the South. That's what it said. All the headlines, all the commentators that, you know, Carter's got the South. They've written off the South. I think we know now that that's not the case. We haven't written off the South. I think certainly the South understands better than any other part of our country that regional politics are divisive politics. And the South was used as the whipping boy throughout the 50s and 60s for politically ambitious Northern liberals. So we haven't written off any part of this country. I think we're getting around to another writing off, and I think the South is about to write off Governor Carter. That's what's going to happen. And I can tell you that we intend to crack the South. And I can also tell you that his home may be in Georgia, but his heart is in the far left wing of his party. And that's where it is. And I kind of think that Mr. Carter has taken the South for granted. He has called for social spending programs, which would cost over $100 billion, and that's a conservative estimate. And that's just for the five biggest programs, not the 65 that we see in their platform, either new or added to programs. And if we enacted the entire platform, we're told it would cost $200 billion. That's $200 billion. And that platform wasn't written by someone else. They had no contest at their convention. It's a Carterized platform written by those who represented Governor Carter. And in those 65 new or expanded programs, he also calls for 22 new or expanded agencies. And this is that man who tells us he's going to organize and streamline the government. Another thing that worries me is his attitude on defense. I don't say that I have all the answers on defense, but I say to a man who said in 1975, I want to cut defense spending $15 billion. He's now say he didn't say that, but he said that about everything else he said. He now says, I want to cut defense $5 to $7 billion or maybe $8 billion. It just seems to me that we're treading on very, very thin ice. And I think President Ford's strength in this campaign is the fact that, first of all, he's for a strong defense, and secondly, we're at peace in the world, and that means a great deal to everybody in this audience. Now, I've been trying to figure out what to do with Mr. Carter. I mean, in the right way. And I sort of hope when this campaign is over, the South will be willing to consider an amnesty for Mr. Carter. Now, I don't mean that you should say what he did was right, but I think you should forgive him. And I think he should have the opportunity to perform alternate service. Instead of being president, he can be George Meany's makeup man. He should be given the opportunity to learn that people don't like to be used, wherever they live. They don't want to be used. They want to be taken for granted. And I don't say that you should forget the fact that Mr. Carter enlisted as a man standing for fiscal responsibility, limited government, and a strong national defense. But now he's AWOL, always way out left. And I don't say you should forget that he used the South as a stepping stone to the presidential nomination. I don't say you should forget that when he was sure he had the nomination, he turned his back on the South. No, you should be charitable. You should be forgiving. You can forgive him for advocating defense spending cuts, gun control, forced busing, increasing taxes on churches, raising taxes for middle-income Americans, eliminating the tax deduction for mortgage interest payments, rigid agricultural controls, and insulting those who served America by opening his arms to those who refused to serve America. To forgive is divine, I know. But to elect him would be ridiculous. I just think with all the voice I can muster, I picked up a little cold last Friday standing there in the draft. It sort of blows hot and cold, and I couldn't adjust my thermostat. But I think Mr. Carter's going to have a long time after November to find out what the South really stands for. And I think I know what the South really stands for. And President Ford knows what the South really stands for. Let me spend about 3 or 4 minutes on that. And I'll... No, you can leave before that, but if you want to stay. As I've traveled around the South, I think I understand. I've been here before. I was the chairman of the Republican Party during a rather troubled time in our history, known as Watergate. I hasten to add, as I always have, that that was my night off. But we've been charged with Watergate by Senator Mondale and by Governor Carter, the inference being that anybody who might have been a Republican at that time and had any position of responsibility was somehow involved. Well, that's not a fact. American people know that's not a fact. They keep pouring it on and pouring it on. But as I look around the South, I think all Southerners ought to be aware of the fact that George Meany does have a strong influence in this campaign. As I tried to say last Friday on television, he should have influence. He represents a great many working men and working women. At least he says he represents working men and working women. I doubt that he represents really or reflects the views of a great many. Do you know what Mr. Meany wants? The first thing he wants is to repeal Section 14B of the Taft-Hartley law, known as the right-to-work law. I'm against repeal of that law, and so is President Ford. You know, 25% of the working men and women belong to labor unions. The other 75% do not. I think there ought to be some freedom of choice. The working man or the working woman ought to make that choice, and not Mr. Meany and Mr. Mondale and Mr. Carter ought to make that choice. And so I say, if you need one reason, if you're a businessman or an agriculture, take a hard look at 14B. And while I'm talking about 14, what about Proposition 14? Oh, it's not here in the state of Mississippi yet, but it's out in California. If you think 14B is frightening, the repeal of that, you ought to take a look at Proposition 14. That says, among other things, that labor organizers can come on your private property for as much as 3 hours a day to organize farm workers. You might guess who's for that. Cesar Chavez, George Meany, Mr. Carter, and Mr. Mondale. We're opposed to it. We think it goes too far. I tried to point out last Friday, and I said today in Texas, that Governor Carter should give America some assurance that if by some unfortunate turn of events he should be elected president, that Senator Mondale will have no role to play in our defense establishment. Let me tell you why. Have you ever looked at his voting record on defense? He's been against every new weapon system that came down the pike.